Welcome to the June edition of Authors Are Rockstars. I'm Allison.
And I'm Michelle.
For those of you who might be new to our podcast, Authors Are Rockstars features author interviews and young adult book recommendations, and we like to wrap up each month's episode with awesome music that reminds us of our featured author's book.
Thanks, Allison. All right, well, this month we're talking to author Myra McIntyre, who wrote the book Hourglass, which comes out on June 14th. This book is fantastic. Wouldn't you say so, Allison?
Oh my goodness, yes. I seriously didn't want to do anything else once I started reading that book. Addictive is an understatement.
Yeah, I loved it. It's perfect for every geeky girl out there. And guy. I love how smart and real all the characters are. They're so genuine. I feel like they're really people who come off the page and I want them to be my friends. I love them. I love Emerson's snarky attitude. She would be so much fun to hang around.
I know. I totally wanted to be her BFF.
Definitely. Well, before we get to the interview, let's talk about our picks of the month.
Okay, so on top of the amazingness that is Hourglass by Myra McIntyre, I want to talk about Hereafter by Tara Hudson. If you like afterlife stories or ghost stories, you're going to like this one. It's about a ghost named Amelia who can't remember anything about her life, so she's just sort of wandering aimlessly in the afterlife. Everything changes, though, when she witnesses a guy about to drown in the river. And as he's about to die, he sees her and they have a moment. Their connection leads to his survival and he seeks her out afterwards to get to know her. And obviously he has a lot of questions for her, like, what were you doing in the river? And she has to let him know that she's dead. Awkward, right? So a lot of the first part of the book is devoted to Amelia getting to know this guy, Joshua, and of course, falling in love. So there's a lot of conversation and not so much action, which may not be everyone's thing, but I liked it. I really got into it. There's this whole really suspenseful mystery element to it because Amelia starts remembering more about her life and Joshua helps her try to figure out who she was and how she died. I think that was my favorite aspect of the book, Amelia uncovering her own history little by little. I love that kind of thing. Also, the relationship between Amelia and Joshua is complicated by more than just the fact that he's alive and she's not, which I know. What could be more complicated than that, right? But there's also an evil ghost who's really creepy, and Joshua's grandmother who makes it her personal mission to exorcise Amelia. So things get pretty tense toward the end of the book, and it's a really awesome, engaging read that I could not put down.
That sounds really good, Allison. I haven't read that yet, so I'm going to have to. Well, my pick of the month is something a little different. It's Libba Bray's Beauty Queens, which is published by Scholastic. In this story, a group of teen beauty queens get stranded on a desert island. Well, what they think is a desert island, and they have to come together and fight for their lives instead of compete against each other. This book is hilarious. It's a satire on politics and corporate culture and teen culture, and it's just so funny. Okay, I have to share a little piece with you just so you can just get an idea of how over the top hilarious this is. These are lyrics to a song that's mentioned in the book called Safe Tween Crush. Wanna rock you girl with a butterfly tunic? No, I'm not kid, I'm just your emo eunuch. Gonna smile real shy, won't cop a feel, cause I'm your virgin crush, your super safe deal. Let those other guys keep sexin', you and me, we be textin', about unicorns, rainbows, and our perfect love. Girl, we fit together like a hand in a glove. Now, I don't mean that nasty. Tell your mom, don't get mad. I even wrote, you're awesome, on your maxi pads. That, I think, really sets the tone for how over-the-top ridiculous this book is. So, go into it with an open mind, and you'll have a lot of fun. Okay, well, that's enough on Beauty Queens. Let's get to the interview. We're here with Myra McIntyre, author of Hourglass, which is a book to watch this summer. You're going to love it, seriously.
So good.
Let's start off. Myra, could you summarize briefly for our listeners?
I will try. Hourglass is about a girl named Emerson Cole who has been going to school in Arizona, and she comes back home to the South to a place that's based on Franklin, Tennessee, so Middle Tennessee, and her brother renovates historical buildings, which causes a problem for her because she sort of sees historical figures. And most people think she's crazy because other people don't see them.
That is a problem.
Yes.
Well, so there's a big time travel element to Hourglass. We both love time travel. And all of the time travel stuff in your book was so well thought out. We were just totally blown away by that. So what kind of research did you do to construct all of that so solidly?
Thank you so much. I love to hear that. That's one of my favorite things to hear, that people like the research, because I did a ton. Luckily, last summer, Morgan Freeman did that series called Through the Wormhole, and I watched it obsessively, and it gives a lot of scientific background about how time travel could work, and it also gave me like the right topics to Google. So I did that, and then I have a friend who used to work for NASA who's actually a theoretical physicist, and I sort of ran by. I was like, you know, this is teen fiction, so it might not be your thing, but could this possibly work? And he would say yes or no. So,
oh, that's awesome.
It was really helpful. And we went to high school together, and we found each other again through Twitter, which is so odd, but yeah.
That's super cool. Really cool.
Yes.
Have you always been interested in time science?
I'm what you'd call a geek, so I like anything that is scientific-based. It's hard to explain. I guess the easiest way to say it is when I started to write, I was really enjoying like the paranormal trend, and I knew that I did not want to go vampires or werewolves. And I wrote the first chapter, and when I was done, it was for a writing group. It was just supposed to be a prompt. And when I got done is when Emerson says, "How did he know my name?" And I was like, "Done." And then 2 days later, I was like, "You know, I'm not done." So I didn't want him to be a ghost. So I just went to me the next, with a lot of brainstorming, logical route, which could be a time slip. So I don't know if you looked up time slip, but it's not what a lot of people think it means.
Right. Yeah. Can you define that for our listeners, though, if however much you want to say about your book and time slips?
Okay. It's funny because someone had, I was like, if you want to know more, you should Google time slip.
Right.
And they did, and they got like the time travel definition. But in Hourglass, a time slip is a person who's caught in time.
Right.
Kind of like on a film loop. And I have a ton of research on this too. There's a couple of Civil War houses and a little further up north that one has a soldier trapped. He walks down the hallway over and over again. And so that just really grabbed me. So.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating stuff. Actually, I thought it was so clever how your main character couldn't stand to be in places with a lot of history because she starts seeing too many of these time slips. And obviously it's not funny to her, but I was kind of cracking up over the fact that it's like a pain for her to go to Civil War reenactments and like she has to avoid the entire continent of Europe. So
yes.
Did you have fun thinking of those different places and situations that would like make her feel uncomfortable?
I did, and I'll give you a little teensy hint about the sequel. We're not done with Rose. So,
Yay! Okay, you just officially made my day.
Yeah.
They'll be back, those rips.
Awesome.
In a different way than you might anticipate. And I'll get to share that, I think, on June 30th. So Hold tight. Yeah.
Very cool.
But, I did, and you know, it's funny because living near Franklin, Tennessee, the Battle of Franklin was like the bloodiest battle. Widow of the South, I think, is the guy, or is the name of the book that the guy from here, whose name I suddenly can't remember, wrote about how terrible, how many people died and how they stacked up bodies. I didn't go there, but yeah, I've thought about all the fun things that she could run into.
Yeah, so. It'd be kind of awkward, huh?
Yeah, awkward is her middle name, though, so...
Well, I know you and I have discussed this over Twitter, but I love the science fiction references, especially Doctor Who.
Yes!
Did the Doctor's time travel help you stir up any ideas for this time slip romance a little bit?
You know, it's funny because a friend was like, I'm going to write a time travel, and I was like, don't, because your head will, like, hurt for the rest of your life. So I watch it, and honestly, about 64% of the time, I have no idea what's going on. But, you know, Maz Smith's hair is fabulous. And so I just roll with it. And Tennant was great, too. Mm-hmm. Eccles, not so much for me. But, yeah, they'll say words or, like, theories. And that's when I write it down. I'm going to, you know, sort of look up what it meant. So, kind of.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, switching gears a little bit, let's talk about your characters. The character of Emerson is so great. We totally want to hang out with her. She's just smart, strong, snarky, like so much fun. So did you put a lot of yourself into her personality?
you know, I tried to do things to like counteract myself because I think it's really easy to, really easy, especially when you're writing first person, especially when it's your first, it wasn't my first, but anyway, it's so funny because my previous job, people used to tell me my edit button was broken all the time. And I was like, yeah. And so that line definitely is a little autobiographical. Other than that, I'm not short. I cannot do any sort of martial arts. And I don't run, like, even to the mailbox. So those things I tried to make are a little bit different. But the mouth, I mean, yeah.
That's awesome. That must have been fun to write.
It was, yeah. Yeah, I got to say some, or I mean, she got to say some things that I wouldn't usually say, right. So that was fun too. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I absolutely love how real all your characters are. I feel like in YA that sometimes authors have to rely on stereotypes a little bit just to keep the plot moving, and characters tend to lose some depth. You were able to maintain a quick-moving, complicated plot line and keep these characters genuine. Was that part of your focus as a writer, or were you simply just that amazing?
Yeah. Woo! Thanks. You guys can totally move in anytime you want. I've got.
Obviously, you're just that amazing, but, you know.
No, not at all. It's funny because Michael had, he was first, and he had shown up in, like, three other stories, but they were just always, it was always the wrong place for him.
Oh, wow.
So he was kind of formed as, you know, a little bit of a hero complex, a little bit of a, you know, I'm a good guy. And then I thought after I wrote those first five pages, I was like, wow, she would really counteract him. So how would I write her to, you know, most clash with him? Caleb, he talks in my head, like, he totally showed up and would not shut up. He was supposed to be someone else entirely, and he did that sort of woo-woo thing that writers talk about where he just sort of showed up fully formed and I wasn't going to argue with him.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and Drew is based on two of my close friends, so that was easy.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so awesome. Well, it all worked out great.
hope, yeah.
So the southern setting of your book is really awesome. It's so heavily infused into the writing, like 100%. And some of Emerson's turns of phrases definitely sounded really southern to me, which is fun. I don't know. I'm from California, but I have like a little bit of an obsession with the South. So I have to know, you have a southern accent. Does Emerson definitely have a southern accent as well?
She does. And, you know, it's funny because she's just come back from Arizona, and it's maybe... She maybe lost it a little bit, I think, and is probably definitely coming back into it. And this is sort of, Michael is from Georgia, and my husband is from Georgia.
Oh,
and so their accent is so different from ours. It's a little bit sexier. I think Tennessee accent can fall into redneck very easily. And, you know, with the Georgia accent, you're like, oh, Tara and Scarlett, they don't.
Right.
Sound like idiots. So they both have, everybody has one. All the people, except for, you know, Dune, because he's from Hawaii.
Right.
So, and Nate is from California.
Okay.
I don't know if that's in the books, but it's the way it is.
So, oh, that's super cool. I love it. So do you have a favorite southern saying?
Not that I can tell you.
Okay.
we say butter biscuits and I say butter biscuits and honey. My husband says butter biscuits and gravy. And we also say son of a biscuit. So that's a little bit of a of an off-color one.
That's adorable.
I'll tell you those others later. Yeah.
I really wish I could pull that sort of saying off in my Valley Girl accent, but I'll keep working on it.
Yeah.
Well, Emerson is such a unique name for a female character. I have to admit, I think you saw my review this morning, but I'm going to be my next child, Emerson. I love it so much.
Yes.
How did you come up with that name?
The book that lives under my bed, the book that shall not be named or ever published or read by another living human ever, because I will burn it. I sort of have this obsession with romantic poets, and I've talked about on Twitter before the tasty British man sandwich, which consists of Lord Byron and Shelley and then me in the middle. And then, oh, Lord, you're just going to have to censor, aren't you? But Anyway, so I had a character in that book named Keats. His first name was Keats. I was like, oh, that's fun. And then when I moved on to this one, I was like, Wordsworth? I mean, we got to go to America at some point. And then I was like, oh, Emerson. And yeah, I like it too. So she's named after the poet.
Oh, very cool. Well, so Hourglass is coming out really, really soon, like June 14th. How are you feeling?
You know, it's weird because I'm waiting to hear back from my editor on the sequel, get my edit letter so I can revise. I'm definitely a stronger at revising than I am at first drafts. Mm. And really, that's kind of all I can think about because I know what's wrong. Like, I know what I need to fix. And it goes through my mind all the time. My husband has blocked Goodreads and Amazon. From my computer. And if he catches me on the phone, he like smacks me, but he looks obsessively, so that is fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there was a really terrible period right before the deadline for book two when I thought I was going to die pretty much. And then now I'm kind of zen because really there's nothing I can do. I mean, it's out of my hands. It's not mine anymore. It belongs to the readers now. So
it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of writers say that. And, you know, I've seen just nothing but good stuff about Hourglass, and I'm definitely going to add my voice and write my own review about that because I just thought it was so fantastic. But I can definitely see, like, that blocking Goodreads and Amazon would be a big sanity saver because you don't have time to be checking those all the time.
Well, and it's funny. I was talking to another writer friend yesterday and just said, you know, I kind of realize that when I obsess over or let the reviews that are not as kind get to me, it's kind of an insult to the people who liked it. I mean, those are you don't want to listen to like the voices that are, shoot gold from your fingertips, or, you know, the ones that are like, you're the biggest idiot that ever lived. So trying to find like that balance in between.
Yeah.
Stay off Goodreads and Amazon because you don't need to know.
Yeah. It must be hard. I mean, maybe writers back in the day had it, I don't know, a little easier because they didn't have those external like reviews coming at them, but it's a challenge for you guys today, I think.
Just have to be self-disciplined, and I'm not, so.
Well, let's switch gears here a little bit and talk about a little bit of your history as a writer. Like, what inspired you to become a writer, and could you share maybe a story about how you came to be published?
Sure, and I always wanted to be a writer, and it was the case of you will never be able to eat or survive or feed your family if you choose to do that, and so I was an English major in college with a film emphasis and a British lit emphasis, and I was also a double major in sociology. And what was, my parents were super happy about all that money. When I graduated, my mom was like, what are you going to do? I was like, work at the mall? And so luckily it all worked out, but my husband played minor league baseball, and we moved 36 times in 5 years. And the consistent thing for me through that, I always had to take my box of books. It got smaller as I figured out, you know, it's a pain in the butt to move a lot of stuff. But it's always been, reading has always been such a huge part of it for me that you don't realize, I think, as a writer, that reading is part of the job. It's such a huge part of the job. And when I finished Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, I literally hit the ground on my knees and just said, okay, I will write a book. I was bawling, of course. I will write a book. It doesn't matter what happens to it. It's just that this is what I'm meant for, and I'm going to do it. And I did. And I put that one under the bed, and then I wrote another one.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And getting published, I mean, I feel so, so lucky and blessed to be with Egmont because they're smaller, but they're smaller. And that really works for me because I've talked to pretty much everyone in the office. And I feel like we get each other. So that's been great to be with them.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. So what drew you to young adult literature in particular?
I read a ton of like cozies, mysteries. Uh-huh. I love Janet Ivanovich. I love Stephanie Plum. I love how she gets into like those messes all the time. And I really enjoyed Twilight. I mean, people can come and shoot me if they want to.
But no, we like it too.
I really enjoyed it. And I thought, what would kind of happen if you put Bella and Stephanie Plum in a blender and what cool. you come up with? And I knew that I wanted things to be funny, and I also knew, or, you know, try to be funny. And then I also knew that I wanted, that's just the best time of life. Everything is new. I adore like sexual tension when it's so new and everything is so stressful and you know,
right.
I enjoy that time of, I don't know anything, but I think I do mostly.
Yeah.
And yeah, just it's, those are the people I'm going to tell stories to.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I think you definitely hit the nail on the head describing the teen years. So you've mentioned Twilight and Harry Potter. What are some of your other favorite young adult books?
I mean, I read so much stuff, and very rarely do I not like something. Can I not find something to like? I have enjoyed, I love Rachel Hawkins' Hex Hall series. And part of it is because I know Rachel and I can hear her through Sophie.
Oh, that's
and I laughed twice as hard. Victoria Schwab is one of my crit partners, and she wrote The Near Witch. And her writing is amazing and lyrical and beautiful and nothing like mine. So we like sort of compliment each other in that I really fangirl her and she really fangirls me. So, and it's a nice mutual agreement.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And I definitely love, you know, Cassie Clare, Holly Black, the White Cat, Red Glove. She blows my mind with her world.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I would do a lot to sit under her world building teaching. I mean, I would give lots of things. And then other than that, I mean, it's part of what's been so much fun about this journey is that I've made a lot of friends who are writers, and it's always amazing when I know them and then I read their stuff. Like I just read The Revenant by Sonia Gensler, and I, not that I didn't think she would write a lovely book, but it was so lovely. I mean, I emailed her at midnight and I was like, I'm bawling and this is gorgeous and I see you in here and also don't. So it's just, yeah, it's been a lot of fun, that part of it.
Oh, that's so neat. That's cool that you can know so many of these authors and bring your personal experience with them into your reading experience. That's really cool.
I mean, the Twitter's good for that, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, it's true. It really is. Oh, well, talk to us a little bit about your writing process. Do you have a special spot you like to write in or a particular music you like to have?
I have an office. I stole my children's playroom right after I sold.
How did they like that?
They got over it.
Yes. Mama needs what mama needs.
Yeah, I mean, for real. Because I needed a door. It's funny because I wrote Hourglass. I wrote half on my couch.
Wow.
And then I wrote half. I put a desk at the top of our stairs in our house right outside my, at that point, 2-year-old and 7-year-old's rooms, like right in the middle.
Wow.
And just did the best I could. And, you know, there were naps back then, too, so that was awesome.
That helped.
But I have an office, and I like to wear a hoodie while I write.
Cute.
I don't know why. It doesn't matter if it's 90 degrees. I like fuzzy socks and clove candles and Miles Davis. All those things are important.
That sounds good. You've got the ritual down.
Yes.
So speaking of you being a mom, we are also moms, and we need to know how you do it all. How do you find a balance between family life and writing?
I do not. I mean, that's the truth. Honestly, that's one of the things that I've really been learning lately, because that deadline, the last 4 months of that deadline, my husband is amazing. I'm just going to say, the man cooked, did laundry, vacuumed. I mean, he's a little obsessive compulsive, so he also enjoys those things. But he really and truly, none of this would be here if it weren't for him. He will take the boys and then they'll do things like run in my office and pull down their pants and jump around. But still, you know.
Awesome.
What boys.
Yes.
But I'm trying to find balance now. I learned a really, really hard lesson those last 4 months of that deadline. And really just sort of when I turned it in, I just walked away. I didn't get on Twitter. I wasn't blogging and nothing. I was like, I need to just clean things and cook things. So now knowing that the revision is on the way, I've just set up some really solid boundaries on my time. Like when my kids are home, that is what I'm doing. Unless my husband is here, unless the babysitter's here, this is my main job. But when I'm on deadline, I really, for this one, because it was like a month last year that I had to revise everything. I do not know what will happen. Maybe I won't sleep.
There's always something that has to give, huh?
Yeah, that's the first thing. Yeah.
Well, the process of writing a novel, finding an agent, getting published, all of that must have been such a roller coaster. What's the biggest thing you've learned throughout the whole process? And can you share some advice with our aspiring writers who are listening?
I will say the number one thing is when you query agents and you are you're really kind of in a roundabout way looking for the life partner of your career, and ideally, and Holly Root is my agent, and I trust her implicitly. She knows me. Like the other day she called me and she was like, you know, are you okay? And I was like, blah, 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 blah. All the stuff. And she was like, yeah. I was like, how did you know? She was like, I could kind of feel you vibrating through time and space. And I was like, yeah, kind of. But having her on my side and knowing that she was the right one, I queried 10 agents and got 8 requests for fulls and ended up with 3 offers.
Wow.
For representation. And Holly was like, you know, if you've really got these people interested in you, I will step back. But I just knew that she was the one I wanted. And so I said, let me change this scene for you, because we had talked about one scene that it ended up getting cut. Let me just try and see if I can do it better. And it was one of the most amazing writing experiences in my life, because I knew I had to take it to the next level. And that's when I really learned that I really am a reviser, instead of a, you know, first time get it right kind of gal. And when she called me to tell me, I said hello and she said yes. And that was all. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was amazing. And she, having the right person on your side, even if you have to wait, even if you have to query with the next project, I know people, I want to say that it was Lauren DeStefano, and I know I just said that wrong, who wrote Wither, who queried Barbara Powell with something that Barbara didn't take on, and then queried her again with Wither, and it was a yes. So I think hanging out for that right one is really wildly important.
That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. All right. So we're almost ready to wrap up, but here on Authors Are Rockstars, we like to ask a very important and thought-provoking question, something deeply revealing about your characters. So if you're ready.
I'm ready.
Emerson and Michael are going out for karaoke. What would they sing?
Emerson would hold up the wall with a scowl on her face and mock everyone in the room. And Michael would probably sing You Are the Sunshine of My Life to her.
Aww.
While laughing the whole time, because she was mortified.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
That's awesome, I think. Oh,
no, wait. She might sing a Salt and Pepper song. Maybe.
Okay, I think we definitely need this worked into the sequel somehow, so
let us know. I will.
Well, thank you, Maya, very much for joining us here today. We had so much fun chatting with you, and we are looking forward to the release of Hourglass on June 14th.
Thank you so much, Myra.
Thank you.
Well, that was our interview with the amazing Myra McIntyre. Thank you again for the awesome interview, Myra. You totally rule. Listeners, be sure to check out Hourglass in stores on June 14th.
Wow, that's like today. Congrats, Myra. All right, well, to wrap things up today, we're going to finish off with our awesome song of the month. This month, we have Amy Ayres, who's a California-based artist, and I hope I'm saying that right. And the song is One More Day, and I just felt like it really connected with Michael and Emerson's love story. So here you go. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
I want you to know a little about what it's like when you're not around. I want you to see a little of me.